home improvement horror stories and how you can prevent them. I'm Lee Rayburn, and this hour, our guest is attorney Kevin Trost from Trost LLC. He's been doing this. He's got decades of experience as an attorney handling real estate disputes and cases like the ones we're going to talk about this hour. Recently wrote an article for the State Bar of Wisconsin. The Know Your Legal Rights bi-monthly column features our guest, Kevin Trost. And if you've got home improvement horror stories or questions about how you can prevent them, you can join us at any time today by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email talk at WPR.org. And Kevin Trost, welcome back to the show.
Hey, good morning, Lee. It's nice to meet you.
It's a pleasure to have you back. And I just want to start with when we're talking about home improvement and where the law meet. I suppose we don't want to have to go up against the law itself if we don't have to. So when we're protecting ourselves when it comes to home contractors, where do we begin?
Absolutely. Your take on it is absolutely 100% correct. If you can avoid getting into a legal action involving a contractor, all the better. And so,
from an attorney.
Absolutely. And on that front, one of the best things you can try and do is do your homework on the front end before you ever hire a home improvement contractor to make sure that the person that you're considering as your contractor is somebody you actually want to hire mm-hmm. and you think is going to do the kind of work that you're expecting to happen, and that there aren't going to be any crazy surprises along the way that you would not necessarily anticipate.
What's my homework, Kevin?
Your homework?
Yeah, you're telling me to do my homework for prevention. What's my assignment?
Sure. I think, you know, once you have the name of a contractor, their company, and usually a lot of contractors are small shops, and so you might be dealing with the person that owns the company, so mm-hmm. you might have an individual's name. You might want to start out by just researching them on the internet mm-hmm. and seeing what pops up. There might be some helpful or informative Yelp reviews out there or reviews on other sites about this particular contractor and their work. You could also ask the contractor for some referrals that you could call to see if, what type of work they do, if that there are actually other people out there who have been pleased with their work. You want to know the background of this contractor. Is this somebody who, just started doing this type of contracting work 2 years ago? Or have they been in this business under this same name for 20 years or so? I mean, that can give you some modicum of relief and calm that you're with somebody or you're going to be signing up with somebody who, has been able to be in this business for a while. And sometimes what you see is that if a contractor may not have the best reputation, that they'll start a company mm-hmm. under a contracting business, and that'll go on for a few years, and then the problems start popping up, right? And then they decide, hey, it's time to close this company down, and I'm going to start a new company.
Let's rebrand. Under this other,
exactly. Let's rebrand under a different name. And so that's where it's helpful to know the name of the principal, the president, mm-hmm. the owner of that company, so that you can do some research and see if they pop up on the internet being associated with other home improvement contractors and other home improvement companies in the past.
Kevin, when I think of internet reviews, I think that most likely you're going to go online and leave a review if it's poor. If you have a good experience, generally, you're more inspired to go out and write a review if you have a bad experience. So I wonder how much that tempers the online reviews. And I'm just thinking, sometimes it can be a little unfair out there online, and anybody can write anything at any time.
It can be. And so with that, you have to try and consider where the person who's leaving that review is coming from. Mm-hmm. Is this somebody who, just had a really bad experience? Or are they making a mountain out of a molehill? and so you have to take that with a grain of salt. But some of the other research that you should do is make sure that the contractor that you're planning to sign up with is licensed. They have some sort of proof of insurance so that if something goes haywire, they you know, they're putting on an addition to your house and the addition ends up causing damage to the existing part of your house, that there's insurance that can be, that come into play to cover those costs.
So who is the license agency in Wisconsin for our home contractors?
That's the State of Wisconsin Department of Safety and Professional Services.
Okay.
Also known as DSPS.
And we can check with them?
You can check with them. They have an online portal where you can look up the licenses of various tradespeople throughout the state.
What about the Better Business Bureau?
That's a good place to look.
Okay.
See if there's complaints with them.
Let me. I want to ask you, because I've always wondered from an attorney's perspective. Wisconsin has the CCAP, the Circuit Court Access Online program,
sure,
where you can type in a name and find out any. You can find out a lot on there.
Yes, you can.
Legally wise, but I wonder from an attorney's perspective, is that useful at all, or is that just?
It can be.
Okay.
I mean, you type in somebody, you know, a contractor's name and. See if anything pops up.
Yeah.
And especially if there something pops up, and usually if more than something pops up, then that might be an indicator that you have to give that contractor a second look.
So if there is a quantity issue on the CCAP when you search, you may raise some red flags.
It very well could.
And so when we're talking about home contractors and red flags, Kevin Trost, what are the biggest ones we should be looking out for?
Well, the State of Wisconsin Administrative Code requires certain things to be included for a home improvement contract. And this is for written contracts, which are required anytime there's either a deposit required before work is performed or where there's any money that needs to be paid out before the completion of the job. And frankly, from my own experience, almost all home improvement contractors want some money either up front or before everything is said and done.
And if there is any money up front or before the project is completed, by law in Wisconsin, there has to be a written contract for it.
Then they need to have a written contract.
Okay.
And that written contract, there's certain things that have to be included in there, such as a description of the scope of the project, which should be fairly detailed. Additionally, the overall price, the estimated price, how everything is being charged. If this is a contract that's kind of a lump sum contract where, you know, the overall price is what you're paying, or if it's a contract where this is the estimated price where we think it's going to come in, but we're really charging on an hourly basis, so that price may or may not be accurate. The contract should specify that.
Okay.
And if it's an hourly type of arrangement, the contract should also specify what they're getting charged hourly.
Okay. So the actual hourly rate should be included in there, as well as whatever supplies they're going to need and material they're going to purchase. But that estimate can often end up being a far cry from what the end cost could be.
That is true. That is true. It can end up being different. Oftentimes there are changes that are made during the course of a project. But that's what you said there. The materials that are part of the project are something that should be specified in the course of the contract, in that written document. And, you know, you should request that it be fairly detailed. You know, for example, if you're doing a kitchen renovation and the, you know, part of the contract is they're replacing your appliances, and, you know, you're getting a new dishwasher, you really should have specified in the contract, you know, what dishwasher or brand of dishwasher you're getting so that you're not surprised.
A used dishwasher from somewhere down the road.
Exactly. You're getting a dishwasher, and what shows up is something where you look at the name of the dishwasher and you're like, I didn't know that brand existed.
But I don't think it does. But isn't this the nuance of contract law, though, when you're talking about paying money up front or before completion, needing a written contract, that the devil can be in the details and you want as many details as possible to keep the devil out?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why you want to do your homework up front before you hire the contractor, because the more work you put into it on the front end, the less of a chance there'll be a problem on the back end.
Would I need an attorney to review this contract? Would this be something I can understand myself? Would I plug it into AI and see what it says? What do you suggest, Kevin?
A lot of times people don't need an attorney to review the contract. Okay. Sometimes it gives them an extra peace of mind to have somebody review it.
Especially a bigger contract.
Right, especially a bigger contract.
Yeah.
You see that more often when it's you're adding an addition to the home,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, also if you're entering into a contract for the construction of a brand new home, where you're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
But if it's something like replacing your roof,
yep.
Then typically you don't see that so often. People usually feel pretty comfortable with what they can, deduce themselves.
Back to the details here for a second. What about time frame in the contract? Is that a part of it?
Yeah. If you have a written contract, there is a requirement under the law that the estimated start date and estimated end date be written in there on the written contract. Now, it doesn't mean that the project's actually going to get done on that end date. And in fact, that's a lot of times what you see if
yeah.
there's a violation of the terms of a contract. The end date has gotten pushed down the road.
Sure.
Several, 6 months, something or more. But when that happens, a contractor is obligated to advise of that there's going to be a delay on the start date or a delay on the end date for the project, and provide an explanation as to why.
So their legal requirement then is to actually talk to you, let you know. And I would imagine that silence from the contractor is probably...
not golden.
Yeah, that's a well put. Kevin Trost, our guest, founding attorney of Trost LLC, taking a look at home contractor horror stories today and what you need to know to prevent them. And you can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email talk@wpr.org. Let's go to Samantha in Whitehall. Hi, Samantha.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Quite a few years ago, I had a friend who had this happen to him. Him and his wife had to have a new roof put on their house, and they got some Amish in the area to do the work. Well, they had to go to Indiana to a wedding. They got some of the teenagers to come in, 14, 15, 16-year-olds to come in and do the work. They said, oh, yeah, they'll be professional. They'll be fine, to do it. And they didn't think anything of it. Well, it started raining. They put tarps up and everything. It started to rain and bust through the house and everything. Now, and then they kind of just ditched on them. They didn't do any of the work they were supposed to do. Now, how would something like that today be solved? They had to do it out of pocket, but, how do you trace something like that? How would that work?
Well, I would imagine if they had a contract, you would end up going to court for it. But if there was no contract, then you have no way to prove that there was a deal made for this work. I am not an attorney. Fortunately, Kevin Trost is.
Right. If there was a written contract, you have some type of document in which to rely when proceeding in court. And in this situation, I don't know the particular details of this situation in the past, but it's not something that is so uncommon that you never hear of it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, especially with roof replacement jobs, you hear of situations or see situations where contractor starts the work
mm-hmm.
and they've lined up a number of jobs. And so they remove your old roofs from the shingle. They might put the new tar paper down or start to do the roof replacement and then start their next job.
Mm-hmm.
But your job's not done yet. And if you have a huge bad storm in the meantime, if they haven't finished sealing up the roof, then you might have some water intrusion problems.
Is that damage then, are they liable for that damage?
That would be damage that they could be held liable for. And that would be a reason why you'd want a contractor who has insurance.
Okay.
Because usually in commercial insurance will cover damage that some your contractors, the insured's work, causes to another area of the house.
This goes back to prevention then, and making sure this home contractor is fully insured and can cover whatever accidents may happen or any delays that may occur or accidents that result are a result of these delays.
Very true.
So that makes sense to me, but at the same time, I've seen the tarps over roofs in my neighborhoods. I've seen the paws, and I've seen how busy roofers are this summer. There's the other perspective here, Kevin, of these home contractors who are doing the best they can with what they've got, with limited workforce, with questions about supply chains, and work that must get done because of the damage that's been done to homes. And I'm thinking of my neighborhood this summer. So from the perspective of the contractor, what legal rights do they have? How are they protected? Or does that fall under insurance?
There are protections for contractors under the law. There's something called a right to cure law, which contractors will rely on, and that applies to remodeling type of contracts as well as new construction contracts, which requires if before a homeowner brings a claim in court, before they run off and file something in court, they have to give the contractor written notice of the problem that they've found,
okay,
and give the contractor an opportunity to make a an offer to make it right or to do something,
you know, to remedy the situation.
To remedy the situation, or perhaps, you know, offer some type of financial discount on the ultimate price or something of that nature. And it's not something that the homeowner necessarily has to agree to, but the right to cure law provides a vehicle to encourage communication to hopefully get the two sides to talk the dispute out and resolve it.
Communication seems to be the key here, both sides, that there needs to be a dialogue ongoing throughout the process before it begins, as it's ongoing, and after completion to make sure that everybody's satisfied.
It does. It does. And part of making sure that everybody's satisfied is on the front end to find out what type of warranty your contractor is offering on the work.
Ooh.
Because ideally, you would want some type of warranty on the work. And oftentimes, contractors will give what you might typically see is like a one-year warranty on the workmanship.
Okay.
Meaning the labor that they put into it. You know, not necessarily, you know, the product. You know, if the shingle itself fails because the shingle's bad, then, you know, then that's an issue with the shingle manufacturer. But if your roof leaks because they put on the shingle wrong, mm-hmm, or they misflashed the roof during the process of re-roofing your house, then that would be something that would fall under a warranty. And if a contractor is going to offer a warranty, that's something that needs to be set out in writing as part of that contract that you're signing. And that's something you want to know up front.
Sure. And that's just a warranty on the work, what I would hope would come standard with most, if not all, contractors. And if not, that might be another red flag about the work that they would do.
That's very true.
Yeah. But at the same time, I could also imagine a number of disputes that would arise from whether or not it was a product being faulty or the work that was bad.
That can be, that can end up being a problem or an issue that needs to get decided and figured out.
When you talk about the right to cure law for contractors, to protect contractors, to prevent this process going to the courts, from a homeowner, does that right to cure statement to contractors need to come from an attorney? Would an attorney need to draft that, or can a homeowner write up their demands or what they believe has fallen short from the contractor and submit that themselves?
That's something they can submit themselves.
Okay. So I feel like we've gone a long way in keeping you out of the process so far, Kevin.
Well, that can be a good thing. That can be a good thing. The less involvement you have to have with attorneys, sometimes the better. But the notice of the right to cure law isn't so complex that it's something that you necessarily have to have an attorney involved in simply communicating to your contractor in writing that there's an issue, there's a problem, and you know they need to come up with a way to fix it.
So have you come across stories in your own work that kind of mirror what we're talking about here today? And what are the best possible outcomes and where do they come from in your experience, Kevin?
Well, the one that comes to my mind is there was a house in another part of Wisconsin where they were getting the house re-roofed. I believe it was because as a result of a hailstorm. And they had signed the contract in the winter and the contractor was going to start in spring, and spring came and contractor wasn't coming. And the homeowner kept following up on a regular basis saying, hey, when's when's this going to start? And finally they start in May and they take the roof off the house. They start, you know, re-tar papering the underside of the shingles, re-tar papering the house on the roof. And, but they don't necessarily finish and they leave the project. They were planning on coming back, but in the meantime, the you know, a bad storm comes through, as you might expect during spring in Wisconsin, and you start getting rain in various rooms of the house.
Oh.
And
was the contractor insured?
In that case, I believe the contractor was insured, which.
I mean, it doesn't make it any easier for the homeowner. I mean,
No. They've
still got cleanup. They've still got the original problem. It's all been exacerbated on the, you know, their top floor and their attic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You end up getting water damage to, you know, the drywall of your ceilings and in the attic. And so all that ends up having to get remediated and replaced. And so
requires another contractor and another contract entirely.
Oh, no, this is a...
It's compounding.
It's spiraling.
I can see where this is leading. So how did this case end up, Kevin?
It ended up in court, but it ended up resolving. You know, most cases in court end up resolving without going to trial, especially on the civil side. And in this situation, that ended up being a resolution that both sides agreed to.
What happens when a contractor goes out of business? Are you just out of luck as a homeowner?
If it's somebody who's done work on your house?
Yeah.
Oftentimes, yeah. Unless they're got out of business because somebody took them over.
Okay, so if they continue on in business as another entity, but as we started the conversation, you want to look for the primary business owner's name and not necessarily the company's name in case they're using shell companies to move back and forward.
Absolutely.
Are there any protection for the homeowners when a company owner is using the shell game of LLCs?
Oh, you can always... No, I mean, you can always try and argue that the new company is simply a continuation of the old company and there's, you know, it's an alter ego. One is the alter ego of the other. But that's oftentimes a long and involved legal court process.
Yeah.
And one, that's probably a road you really don't want to have to go down unless it's absolutely necessary and there's a lot of money at stake.
Because when you're talking about the law, it can get kind of expensive kind of quickly, at least in my experience, unless there's some way to cover court costs from the people who are at fault.
Yes, absolutely true. And there are some claims under the Wisconsin law when contractors act particularly poorly.
Okay.
That allow for the recovery of attorney fees.
Okay.
But can't always count on it.
It's not okay.
And realistically, when you're talking with contractors, and often the kinds that are not paying close attention to the laws and are, violating the laws, flagrantly.
Yeah.
Those tend to be. Smaller shops, ones where the financial wherewithal probably isn't there.
Right.
And so at the end of the day, if you bring a court action and you win everything and all your claims and you get all the money that you were seeking, you might at the end of the day have a beautiful paper judgment worthy of framing and hanging on your wall.
With nothing to show for it.
Exactly.
Kevin Trost, attorney at law, our guest, Home Contractor Horror Stories on The Lee Rayburn Show. Hailstorms bring roofers to the yard, but who can you trust when it comes to home contracts? I'm Lee Rayburn, and we're talking about home contract horror stories this hour and what you can do to protect yourself and your home and your bottom dollar. You can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you have a home contractor horror story? Or do you have questions about what to do to prevent them or what to happen now that you've gone through it? You can also email us, talk@WPR.org. Our guest is Kevin Trost, founding attorney of Trost LLC with over 20 years of experience as an attorney handling real estate dispute cases just like these. And going back to some red flags for a second, Kevin, I want to ask you about what a good or fair amount would be for a down payment on a home contractor job, a ballpark figure. Is there any law that would tell you what would be the parameters here?
No, there's nothing that specifies how little or how much a down payment needs to be or should be. But that is something that you should pay attention to when you're considering a contractor. If they want 90% or 100% of the money up front, that should be a glaring red light that causes questions in your mind as to whether this is somebody you want to go with as a contractor.
Well, just from my perspective, I think it provides no incentive to complete the project.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It doesn't provide a lot of incentive because they've already gotten all their money.
Yeah.
And so it provides them incentive to disappear.
I could understand materials, maybe some upfront costs to get started, but the more I leave on the table for the job at the end, just from my perspective, the more incentive there is to complete the job from the contractor's perspective.
Very true. I mean, a lot of times what the deposit is intended to do is provide the contractor with upfront money to make deposits of their own mm-hmm. on building materials so that they're not forking over a lot of money of their own in order to get materials from Menards or Home Depot or ABC Supply for your project so that they have some money to do that. But then, you know, when you see that a contractor wants 75, 80, 90% of the money up front, then it just makes you start to wonder what's happening with that money, because certainly the upfront material costs aren't nearly that high.
What is there a ballpark percentage that you would suggest in your experience that works best for the homeowner?
Oh, it's usually a range. Some contractors will want 5%, some, 10 or 25%
oh.
up front.
Oh.
And I think any of those numbers fall within the realm of reasonability that wouldn't cause a lot of red flags to go up in
yeah.
my head.
Paul in Wauwatosa called, couldn't stay with us. He says performance bonds can prevent contractors from failing to complete a job.
That's true. And you see performance bonds often on much larger projects,
okay.
usually that are commercial in nature.
But you wouldn't think of that for a roofer?
You don't really think of that for a roofer so much.
Okay.
I have yet to see a roofer who
takes
out performance bonds.
Performance bonds costly, or are they?
I mean, it's an added expense.
Okay. And you're trying to make it work in the budget that you have, and it's already going to be costly and time-consuming. But the bigger the project, the more likely a performance bond may play a role in encouraging completion.
Certainly. Certainly.
Colleen emailed to ask you to discuss working with subcontractors and lien waivers, Kevin.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes the contractor that you hired and that you signed the contract
mm-hmm.
with ends up not being the person that's actually doing the work. Because sometimes your main contractor, the one you signed the contract with, will then turn around and hire a subcontractor, often a laborer or somebody like that, to come and do the physical work on your house.
Sure, I've seen that.
Sure. And so that person would be called a subcontractor because they're the, you know, they're subcontracting with your main contractor. And the subcontractor ends up having rights of their own under the law in order to encourage themselves to get paid. And so there's a whole lien process that the subcontractor can initiate in order to put a lien on the property for the value of the work that they've performed in furtherance of the improvement to your house.
So wait, and they can put a lien on my property if my primary contractor does not fulfill their obligation to a subcontractor?
Yes.
No.
Yes. No, they have the opportunity to do that. I mean, there's certain hoops they have to jump through to give you a, you know, a notice of, you know, their lien rights and then give you a notice of intent to lien.
Okay.
That will give you, you know, will give you a heads up before there's actually a lien on lodged against your property that there's an issue.
So
that
when I make a when I sign a contract with a home contractor and then they start subcontracting out, you get some plumbers in there, you get some electricians in there. How protected am I as a homeowner with my contract with my primary contractor against subcontractors ending up seeking a lien on my property?
Yeah, I mean, this is another reason why you want to do your homework up front.
Okay.
That makes sure you're comfortable with the main contractor that you're hiring.
Mm-hmm.
So that you have some assurance that they are going to go and actually pay their subcontractors, and you won't be left in a situation where your subcontractors are coming back trying to lien your property.
How do you best defend against that? Is that just knowing or having a contractor that has the experience, the track record, the reviews, everything in place?
Right. That's one way to do it. And that's why, you know, one of your, you know, green flags is that this is a contractor that's been, you know, doing this for 20 years. Mm-hmm. If they've been doing this type of work for 20 years, chances are they're able to financially hold things together, and also they will financially pay their subcontractors so you don't get into that type of situation. And another thing is with the subcontractors, you can always ask up front with your main contractor whether they intend to solely perform the job themselves or if this is something where they're going to subcontract out certain work. So that's something to be worked out on the front end.
And if they are going to subcontract some other work out, is there anything else I need to follow up on?
Absolutely. You want to make sure that the subcontractors give lien waivers once they've been paid. And so before you make your final payment on the project, you want to make sure that all the subcontractors that have worked on this project have given lien waivers, meaning that they've been paid and they're giving up their rights to be able to file a lien against your property.
Well, I can see a problem there that they can't get their money until I pay the primary contractor their money. And then after that, if the contractor doesn't pay out the subcontractors, there's still the problem or potential for a lien.
That's always a possibility. But you want to make sure, as a homeowner, you want to make sure you get the lien waivers from the subcontractors, as well as from your prime contractor as well.
Kevin, this brings us to Wisconsin's theft by contractor law. Can you explain the law here?
Sure. There's a law in Wisconsin that's commonly referred to as theft by contractor. And that's a situation, what typically happens is the contractor gets paid, usually their deposit, and then disappears. Hmm. And so they've gotten money from you pursuant to the contract, and they're not performing what they are required to perform under the contract. And so essentially they've committed theft by taking your deposit and running. The other situation you see it often come up in is where the contractor takes their deposit and they show up, they do a day or 2 days worth of work. But, you know, nothing in relation
they
to
They don't
the,
do the job.
Yeah, they don't do the full job. They do a day or maybe 2 days worth of work, but nothing in relation, you know, that is commensurate to the amount of the deposit that they've received. Mm. And then they disappear.
Yeah.
And those, you see those kind of situations. Sometimes they, if it's very pervasive and there's a contractor that is doing this all the time across oftentimes, you know, many communities, many counties, that's when it will get prosecuted criminally.
Yep.
And the theft by contractor law is not only something that can be pursued as a civil claim, meaning the homeowner files a claim in court seeking to recover their money and damages, and I think the attorney fees are tied to that too.
Oh.
But on the other side, on the criminal side of the law, you might have a district attorney in a particular county who's seen this happen repeatedly with the same contractor, that they file criminal charges of theft by contractor against that contractor, meaning if the criminal charges go through, the contractor faces the possibility of going to prison for a certain number of years, and the judge might also impose different criminal penalties, which could include you know, restitution, in mm-hmm. other words, reimbursement of a certain amount of the amount of money that they've made off with.
These are the stories I see in the news most often, is theft by contractor arrests. How do those criminal charges get started?
So there's two sides to the law. There's the civil side,
right,
which is what I typically, which I exclusively deal with. And then there's the criminal side of the law, which is where oftentimes it'll start with through the complaints that people make to the state,
okay,
against somebody's license. And
I'm guessing those complaints would go to DATCAP, the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection?
Yes, you can file a complaint with DATCAP related to home improvement contractors. You can also file a complaint with DSPS, the Department mm-hmm. of Safety and Professional Services. That's the department that oversees contractors' licensing.
Okay.
And sometimes those agencies might make a referral to different district attorneys where a contractor is being flagrantly, you know, violating the laws, particularly theft by contractor situations. And at that point, the district attorney would be the one who proceeds to file and then pursue criminal charges against that contractor.
That doesn't interfere with any sort of civil cases that might be ongoing against the contractor, correct?
No.
Okay.
No. The homeowner still has the option of bringing a civil case of theft by contractor and breach of contract and various other claims.
Whew. It seems like a, I don't know, trial by fire. If you're going to look for a home contractor, there is a whole maze to troll through, but you can stay safe and there are laws to protect you. And our guest, Kevin Trost, founding attorney of Trost LLC, is here to help as well with decades of experience handling real estate disputes like these. You can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can send an email to talk@wpr.org as well. And Kevin, so let's say that the contractor walks away from the job and you're left with a project that's half completed or barely started, and there is a dispute about what to do next or who makes the next move. Do you give them more money in order to continue? Do you, as the homeowner, what recourse do you have with a project that has not been completed?
Well, I think a lot of times the contractor would like you to give them more money.
But as the homeowner, I would not like to give them more money, so we are at a bit of a standoff here.
I think you are. And I think you should be very wary before just simply writing another check to the contractor because they say, oh, I need more money before I can start or before I can do more than 1 or 2 days worth of work. Really, that's what the deposit was there for.
Right.
But
I could hear them saying, and there might be some legitimacy to it. the supplies cost more than we thought. The supply chain is, you know, intermittent at best, and we are at, you know, we don't have any funds to continue this project right now.
And you might hear that, and this is a contractor who works in this business and has been presumably working in this business for a number of months or mm-hmm. years, and so they should have a you know, reasonable feel on the pulse of what the project is going to cost and what the materials are going to cost. And so if the contractor is saying, hey, you need to pay me more money before I do any work or do more work, you should question that.
I'm more than question that. I would want to make some demands. I've got a contract, but that contract has a estimated time frame in it. So there's no, they can say they will get back to us when they have the funding to do it if you can't fund us.
They might say that. And I mean, at some point, if you can't talk things through with the contractor and reach a reasonable resolution as to what to do, you may ultimately just have to make the decision that, you know, we're walking away from this contractor and we're going to hire somebody else to finish out the project.
Going back to this right to cure law, which was sort of the protection that these contractors have, and issuing them a list of demands or insistence from the homeowner's point of view of what you need done, what your expectations are before you begin a court process. What I'm reading between the lines here, Kevin, is having a paper record is very important. That doing this just over the phone probably leaves homeowners vulnerable, that you're going to need to have a written record of everything that takes place and every step along the way.
Yeah, for, you know, decades ago, a handshake deal with a contractor was great. People honored their word and you could, you know, go back to them if you thought there was a problem with what the work they did, and they would come back and they'd fix it. But sometimes that doesn't necessarily work, especially in this day and age.
And neither should phone calls, though. It would mean that it would be a series of emails. It would be a paper trail. It'd be something you could take to your attorney.
True. Absolutely. Your attorney would love to see a vast paper trail with great details.
So it's just like with a contract, you want as many details as possible. With your paper trail, you'd want as much detail in there as you could about the process.
Sure. And when you're going back and forth with your contractor, it's much better if you're communicating over email or text, at least from, you know, your reviewing attorney's perspective, than people saying, well, I talked with them on the phone on this date, and he told me this.
Yeah, it's a because, they said.
Right, because mm-hmm. the contractor's going to come back and say, yeah, we talked on the phone, and I told him this, and
who's going to...
You're right, and then it's a question of who you're going to believe.
Let's go to Parker and DePere next. Parker, hi.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. I'm living the nightmare in which you are talking about right now.
Oh, no.
I hired a contractor, signed a contract on Memorial Weekend of 2025, and as we speak, I still have a cabinet guy in my house cleaning up a mess from the generals that walked. The story is long, and you don't have time to hear it all. I have gotten the paperwork from the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Protection. I plan on filing with the Better Business Bureau. I know that you mentioned a department with the licensing, but I'm going to do all that when I know, like, I have a lawyer involved, and I asked for lien waivers. I never got them. I asked for receipts. That it was like pulling teeth. Mm-hmm. And in my contract, it says I have the right to review documents. They were responsible for all equipment. They took my money and they paid for extras on their line of credit at the place where they buy their stuff. And they charged me for scaffolding and caulk guns and furniture dollies. And in the contract, it says that all equipment is to be supplied by them. And my lawyer asked them questions. Their accounting is atrocious. I found out through the grapevine that they were trying to pass off other people's bills onto me. And I happened to find out they're doing this to another couple in the Fox Valley area. So, I guess my thing is that mine's kind of water under the bridge. I have lawyers involved. They've disappeared after the building permit expired. They pushed it to that day of the final inspection, and then they had a punch list of things they had to fix, and they have not contacted me, nor have they been back since the middle of this June. So, and I have a family of six, kids 11 to 16. We've been living in a finished basement with one bedroom, one bathroom for a year and a half, and they're well aware of how my family's been living. So I guess I want to know, if I go to litigation, my lawyer says that the way these guys operate, that they could just file for bankruptcy, and the money I spend, I'd be out because I'll get nothing. So I guess if I could just get some, like, suggestions of, besides the agencies that you mentioned on your earlier, that I could file paperwork with, what else are my options? Because I don't feel like I have a lot, and it feels like the laws protect these crooked people versus honest homeowners.
Parker, thank you so much for the call, and I am so sorry about you and your family's situation. Kevin, what can we do?
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear of what your family's going through. That's horrible. It's not something anybody really wants to go through or anticipates going through. One of the remedies, like you said, is going through DADCAP, filing complaints with DATCP, also filing separately a complaint with DSPS against the license for this contractor. I don't know all the facts of your case. Your lawyer is much more attuned to that than I am. So really, any advice or thoughts I could give would be at a very high level.
And I know you're in the civil courts, but this seems like, from the way Parker describes it, a prime example of theft by contractor, especially since he suggests that he is not alone in this and not the first one to be victim of it.
Yeah, exactly. And so you might want to explore going and filing a police report regarding the situation, because those police reports get reviewed by the district attorney. And it's another way of trying to funnel things down the criminal path.
And a criminal path would lead beyond the shell game of corporations and filing for bankruptcies, and would find an individual potentially who could be criminally charged. That criminal charge could make it easier, maybe, for a civil judgment?
Not necessarily, but
I'm trying to find a way.
But usually the facts are so blatant in those type of situations where a civil judgment isn't that difficult to get.
Okay, even if the corporation files for bankruptcy and individuals move on?
Yeah, but if the situation is theft by contractor, if there's an amount that's found civilly liable under a theft by contractor law, that's likely to not be a type of debt or judgment that somebody's able to bankrupt their way out of. If I was his attorney, my concern, and this might be the concern of his attorney, is that this general contractor appears to, be doing this all over the place or in multiple places. And so there might be a really real concern of how much is Parker going to sink in legal fees to get a judgment against this contractor that then may not or likely not be able to be collected.
That the well from this contractor is already dry, so trying to dip your legal cup in there is not going to yield any results.
Right. And one thing you find sometimes with these contractors is they take your deposit because you're the next job,
right?
And they use that deposit,
kind of a Ponzi scheme,
to pay off their prior jobs.
Yeah.
And is not right.
Well, that would be a Ponzi scheme. I would think it would be very illegal.
Yes.
So filing a police report may be Parker's next best move in hoping for some justice through the criminal courts.
Right. That might be another avenue for him to pursue to get the attention of the district attorney to perhaps bring criminal theft by contractor charges against this contractor.
Parker, thank you so much again for sharing your story. And again, I am so sorry. I hope you file a police report, and I hope there is some justice down the road. And Kevin Trost, I hope we have done some good today to prevent stories like these from happening again. because they do happen. And I want to thank you for your wisdom and knowledge today, and I look forward to catching up with you soon down the road.
Thank you, Lee. It's been a pleasure.
Kevin Trost, founding attorney of Trost LLC with over 20 years of experience representing individuals, financial institutions, businesses, and insurers throughout the state and federal court systems. Appreciate his knowledge today, and man, what a story. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you are listening to WPR News.